reminds me of two things that just jump out to me. One of them being, there's an episode of Hoarders where it's this old woman and the really, like, pretty counselor, the blonde, she walks in and she's like, oh my god, and she's in the master bedroom and the lady's just in her bed with stuff, you know, piled around her, and she's just laughing. She's like,
she's just laying there in bed. Oh my
gosh. It looked just like Big Edie. It was like, you know, messy. It's startling.
Oh boy.
And there's also that one meme of that lady that's being interviewed on the street, and she's like, I just want to eat carbs and get all fat and sassy.
Welcome back to Salem and Binks Present. I'm your host, Nina. I'll be your Salem today, and I'm joined again by the ever-amazing Bree. She's going to be our Binks
hey.
Today. Hey, my girl. Thank you so much for phoning in, Bree.
No problem.
I love it. It's like I can still pick up on your fabulousness, even through the phone.
Fabulousness. Anyone fabulous who is... Big Edie and Little Edie.
Like, we could be each other's fabulous. Big and Little Edies. We could be recluse together in a mansion that's falling apart with a million cats. I'd still be happy if I were with you.
I would not be, like, singing and dancing. I would definitely be cleaning.
For sure. No, seriously, I think that's my biggest, like, initial takeaway. We'll get there, but that's basically my exact thought. This time around, for Mother's Day, we were trying to figure out, between several different options, what to discuss. I was thinking from things like Mildred Pierce or Baby Boom, all great options. But Bree, being amazing, came up with this great idea to cover Grey Gardens. And what could be a more appropriate time to talk about Grey Gardens when everybody's isolated, everyone's... recluse, everyone's inside, and are we at the point where we're letting ourselves go? Some of us might be. I think we're getting to that. As long as we're taking care of the cats properly, that's the only important thing. I don't care how anyone looks. I don't care how messy. Well, I do kind of care how messy a place is, but just take care of your cats is all I gotta say.
Well, that's the least they did. They took care of the cats and the raccoons, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't...
They fed them their luncheon.
Yeah, Wonder Bread and, like, milk and...
It was like a bowl cabbage, of, like...
I don't know what it was.
Cat, like, dried cat food, and then she just poured milk on it. Which is... Oh, something. Do not feed cats milk, by the way, people of the world. It's not good for them. Basically, we decided... We really wanted to watch the Grey Gardens film adaptation. I hadn't even heard of it, hadn't seen it. I was just telling Bree I might have heard of it way back when it came out, but really didn't catch much of a glimpse of it. And when we wanted to sit down and watch this, I thought to myself, I really want to see the original documentary just so I can totally grasp the entirety of these women and kind of get a feel for really who they are, see the main piece first, and then kind of dive into the adaptation, the whole rest of the story, if you will. And so this is kind of our first double feature. Really, we're talking about both in this episode, so just bear with us. But basically, we'll be talking about the real life story and everything, you know, film-wise in between. So I'm ready to... get into it. This was a big one. I really enjoyed this. I can't wait to watch it all again. At least the movie adaptation.
Yeah, it's definitely a double feature. I suggest watching the documentary first and then the film. Mm-hmm. You kind of get a good picture of what their life was. Yeah. I liked watching it in that order too because I loved the movie.
Yeah.
It was so fun to watch. They did such a good job, and, you know, they go more into their story and their background, and, you know, it isn't just, like, a window into this really, like, dark state that they're in. It's, like, you kind of see how they get there.
Yeah, exactly. I think the original documentary is kind of that window, and then... And you can watch that.
It's like an expose.
Yeah, exactly. Their given background is already something people might not be able to relate to, but just the way that they end up living is already also unique unto itself. I think a lot of people can't quite relate to that either, but I think the documentary is that window of, like, let's just peer into this and watch it for what it is, whereas the film adaptation really tells you the story. And you don't quite get... You get pieces of that story in the documentary. They kind of tell you. For those of you that don't know, the documentary is essentially a glimpse into the lives of these two women. They're cousins of Jackie O. And, like, first, like, direct cousin and aunt. I guess Jackie O's sister, is it Lee Radswell, was, like... And in with the art scene and was going to be working on a documentary or film. And the filmmakers ended up meeting the Beals after kind of seeing it. Really, it's a little bit like The Housewives. It's like after they actually met them, it was like, oh, maybe you're kind of the story. And the other project ended up falling out. And they ended up looking at these women and going, you are interesting, period. We're going to ask if it's okay to film you. And... Once you get to know their characters, you realize, like, they are down for that. They are like, all right, cool. You know, movies, cinema, we're all about the arts. So they get excited about it. And that's really what the documentary is, or how it came to be. I'd say what it entails is essentially their daily life being recluse in their home that's dilapidated. I mean, it was at one point to be condemned, and then Jackie kind of stepped in to say, all right, I'll save this. This is all you really have, so I'll do what I can to let you keep it. But they don't really, after that, even really take care of it.
No.
Yeah.
It's bad. Yeah. I thought it was bad, and then they showed what it was, and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I was like, ooh, this is rough. And then, like, you realize, oh, wait, they have a cleanup sequence, and then what we see is what happens after that. Like, it was a little disappointing. Essentially, yeah, it's them and their daily life, and they pretty much just entertain themselves. They just are either reading books, looking at photos, reminiscing on the past, and which I think they do a lot for the documentary, and then amidst all that are mostly engaging in conversation. I mean, that's all they really do. They're certainly not cleaning and keeping up the estate in, like, any way at all. But that's what you're in for. It is going to be about, like, 2 hours of just that when you go to sit down and watch the documentary. But I think it's worth it to see that. So what was your, I guess, first impression or memory of hearing about Grey Gardens?
I don't know. I had heard about it a long time ago and wasn't interested. It sounded like gross and, you know, kind of like these hoarders that are related to Jackie O. Like, crazy. And then I remember watching Gilmore Girls and they're watching it and they're kind of laughing like, that's going to be us in a few years. And then, I've seen a Documentary Now episode.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about that. Yes. I indulged in all three versions of that today.
Insane.
So freaking good. Oh, my God. Yeah.
That was really funny. What's it called? Sandy Passage?
Yes. Oh, my God. So I want to, like, just go ahead and talk about that, too, because this is kind of a third version, if you will, of the telling of the story, kind of. Really, it's just
so technically, so it's triple. We have a triple feature.
Yeah, we kind of do, for sure. So for those of you who might not know, there is this fantastic show called Documentary Now. It's currently on Netflix, so I've been indulging in it. It's a very niche kind of a show. I don't know if, like, the average so-and-so is gonna maybe get or appreciate it, or at least not understand it fully and might still appreciate it, but it's essentially, you can tell this is a passion project with Bill Hader and Fred Armisen, and they're the, basically the main actors in this show, and each episode is a parody of a real documentary. I think almost all of them are real. There might be one or two that are, like, made up or inspired by several different documentaries at once. So there's a couple of different things like that. But essentially, they're all sort of satire of documentary and documentary styles specifically. So the first episode, the pilot episode of this show, is making fun of Grey Gardens. And I can say inspired by too. It definitely ends up making fun of it. But, you know, it's essentially Grey Gardens. It's called Sandy Passage. And Fred Armisen is Big Edie. And
but their name is Edie.
Yeah. It's like they change all the names, but it's all the same premise. They have some of the same, like, famous little moments in the, you know, documentary now documentary that they have in the real one. It's just such a unique show. If you have not seen it and you're curious, definitely check it out. It's amazing. And obviously we're in love with that first episode because it completely embodies everything that's Grey Gardens. I love it. And then some. It really turns things on its head and becomes a very different story for sure.
It's very much a Fred Armisen kind of thing that just takes a twist you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're a fan of SNL or Portlandia, a little bit of that in there.
Yeah, definitely. So check that out. I will post links for that, too.
So I've always wanted to watch it. I mean, not always, but, like, later I wanted to watch it. And then I remember when the movie came out, and I think it was just released on HBO, but there was a lot of talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was then interested because I do like seeing when, you know, somebody does a biopic, and if it's done really well, it's just so fun to watch. And then if it's done really badly, it's fun to watch also.
Yeah. It's like, ooh.
This movie, I think, was done really well.
I think so, too. And I always kind of think the general, I don't want to say rule, because this is not like some definite thing, but I think a good approach to biopics, if you will, is not really doing the whole, let's show the whole life story of one person, like A to Z. It's more like, let's focus on that specific thing they're known for, or that specific, you know, time in their life, and what led up to that, and what, you know, became of that. I think those tend to work better when they're structured like that. And this is a lot more like that. This film adaptation.
Yeah. Because the youngest we see, little Edie, is like 19 years old. So right. We don't have to go through like their whole life.
Yeah. It's like we don't
see, it's basically like the life of the house. You know, starting when
you're very right.
First moves in.
And that's such a fun moment too, is the beginning of the film when you do see Grey Gardens and it's like and its glory. It's like, what? This is the house? This is what it looked like? This would be like the dream home. Even today, I mean, it's obviously styled in for the 1930s, but the fact that they have a home like that in the 1930s during the Great Depression, obviously they're high society people. They are not even really affected completely by that, but just knowing that is very, like, it just says a lot about what life these women come from.
What's so hard for me to wrap my head around is that they didn't live there that long, and it just really went into disarray so quickly.
Yeah.
Well, my great-grandparents lived in the same house for, like, 60-plus years, and they didn't really do anything to it. Like, it literally looked the same as, like, the day they bought it, but mm-hmm. they kept it up, like,
yeah.
It had original, you know, paneling and flooring, but it looked good. It looked like it did when they first bought it.
So yeah.
I don't understand how someone could live there, you know, in the movie, they show them move in 1936,
mm-hmm.
and then by 1970, three, I think they're filming it, and it's like, it's gone.
Yeah, and that's only, what, 30 plus years? Like, that's not, you know.
It looks like it's been there for 200 years.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how quickly, like, it could get that bad.
It's very.
With, you know, vaccines coming out of the walls.
Yeah. Holes in the wall, holes in the windows. I mean, it is kind of like, it almost looks like damage they did to it on purpose. Like, it looks that bad.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what happened to her estate, you know, the Bouvier estate. I wonder why they had no money.
Yeah, I found this great website called Grey Gardens Online, and it's essentially a guide to almost all the answers I was looking for, but it might have information there about the Bouvier trust and what transpired of that. The there's a really great section called Other Staunch Characters, and it's all famous players that kind of are involved in the in their story and in the history. And so it's cool. It kind of puts a face to everybody's name, which is hard to keep up, I have to admit. When they're mentioning people in the documentary, even when they show pictures of them at certain times, like, I still kind of, I was like, wait, so which one was the husband and which one, like, later came along? And then obviously the movie kind of tells it a little better. It's not extremely accurate, but it, you just, obviously you have a better sense of people's identity. Because this was an HBO movie, it didn't have a VHS, and we're so used to doing old school flicks around here. I'm like, where's that VHS back a box description? This is sort of a back of DVD, or what I'm hoping is on the back of the DVD. Amazon told me this is on the back of the DVD, so. So this is the BOB for 2009's Grey Gardens. Based on the life stories of the eccentric aunt and first cousin of Jackie Kennedy, starring Drew Barrymore and Jessica Lange, Grey Gardens tells the tender, intimate story of an eccentric mother and daughter, both named Edie Bouvier Beale, a.k.a. Big and Little Edie. They were raised as Park Avenue debutantes, but withdrew from New York society, taking shelter at their Long Island summer home, Grey Gardens. As their wealth and contact with the outside world dwindled, so did their grasp on reality. They were reintroduced to the world when international tabloids learned of a health department raid on their home, and Jackie swooped in to save her relatives, based on the lives that inspired the Maisel's Brothers classic documentary. Kind of a boring BOB if that's the one on the back of box, but we are kind of used to reading the cool hip 80s ones that really sell you the movie at a Blockbuster. Kind of miss,
yeah, for sure.
You know, I miss like the quotes, I miss like the hokey remarks and the quips
or the resume.
Yeah, oh my God, the Steel Magnolias one. It had, like, literal full resumes of every actor involved. And I'm like, ah! Hold on, these are all extremely experienced actors. This sucks.
Like, if, we get it. We know all these names.
Right? Okay, I have to be honest with you. And this is just because I haven't heard it enough. And I'm an accent person, typically, even though I'm not great at all my accents. I like to give them a shot. This accent, I just can't, I have no experience with it. I can't do it. I cannot do it yet. One of these days, I have to.
Really? I was hoping you would have something for us.
I know. I gotta work on my little Edie. That's what, I gotta work on that. She's amazing. I could just listen to her talk all day. And that's all she does in the whole documentary.
I mean, it's unique. I don't know if that was more common at the time.
Yeah,
or just the area, but it's so specific.
Yeah, and it's that very much that Kennedy sound. It's that old New England sounding accent. I don't even want to say just New England. That sounds really broad to me. Like, it's very specific. You know what I do like? This is just a random film comment, but I really, what I liked in the film version is that, like, in the documentary, it's from the 70s. It's got that fast film, like, kind of warm, grainy look. Like, it's very, like, yeah, orange washed a little bit. And I really like that the film, it really captured the kind of cold feeling and the Yeah, I don't know. It felt more, obviously it's done later and it's fictionalized, so it's gonna try to feel more like cinematic, like a movie, but I felt like I really enjoyed that because it just brought it more to life, which I loved.
In the movie, Drew wears the, same bathing suit as little Edie in real life, and what had happened was there was a big fan of the documentary and the family.
Oh, really?
And they had found, back in the 70s or 80s, the same bathing suit at, a thrift store.
Oh, my God.
And that bathing suit was on a limited run. It was only, put in production once, and this person had saved it, and then when they were filming the movie, she let them borrow it.
Shut up. Okay, I was wondering.
So it's not a reproduction.
Wow. Because I went, again, on that cool website, Grey Gardens Online, they have a cool section of memorabilia, and it's all these items from the documentary that are talked about and featured, and one of them is, of course, the bathing suit, and it says there's no label on it to indicate who was the maker or who, it just basically said, this is kind of, not maybe a one-of-a-kind, but it assumed to be a very rare item. And when I went back and rewatched the film adaptation and I noticed Drew Barrymore wearing it, I'm like, man, they really recreated that very perfectly. So that actually makes more sense. Wow.
Yeah, isn't that cool? I mean, they were just saying it was a very limited amount that was made.
Wow. What are the odds? How interesting is that?
And then also the piano teacher, his family had a ring that Big Edie had given him, and they lent it to the production.
Oh, wow.
So the guy playing him is wearing his actual ring.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
Spoiler alert, someone redid that home.
Yeah, I heard that she sold it and said, only on the condition that you don't tear it down. I guess she told him all it needs is one coat of paint or something. So, it just needs a new paint job. Bless her heart. I love that. FYI, Brie and I are in remodeling business, so we looked at that.
We come from families in the housing industry, and just watching that documentary, I was screaming and itching on the inside of I want to fix this so badly.
Oh my God.
This house is just driving me crazy, and the potential. And then when you watch the movie and you see, you said it in all its glory, it's
right?
What did you do to this house?
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's in the Hamptons.
Let's talk about what happened to Grey Gardens? What made this house get to that point of being condemned?
Okay, well, number one, mental disorder.
For sure. Number one.
Number two, money.
Yeah.
Money issues.
Yes. And I think the fact that there is in the opening when we see this home and its grandeur, we also get to meet Big Edie's husband. One of the first things he says is this is kind of a lot and we really need to cut back. We need to probably let go of some of the staff. This is a house that had staff. They had maids. They had people running this mansion. And she was kind of I don't really want to get rid of anyone. Okay, get rid of some people, whatever. I think the fact that they eventually did have to get rid of help, I think some people would take it upon themselves to learn how to eventually be resourceful and figure out how to keep up a home like that, but not Big Edie. She was just well, no one's here to do that. So it's that's just how she grew up, is people were always picking up after her. So maybe she just kept on with that same mentality and then added.
Yeah, I mean, it was falling out of fashion to to have staff at that time, and, you know, a big part of the reason was because of the depression, mm-hmm. and, but then also, like, at the end of the 20s, I mean, people were just becoming more independent. They were seeing, hey, you know, we don't need this.
Yeah, that whole lifestyle was changing.
Yeah, we saw this in Downton Abbey, you know,
yeah.
starts, like, dwindling down, and then also, people aren't going into that business, you know, they want to do new, fun things, so that youth is, you know, getting jobs elsewhere, so
yeah.
it was becoming more normal not to have staff or have little staff.
Yes.
And Big Edie growing up with, you know, it sounds like, only having people serve her and, you know, take care of the house, she just was left completely incompetent in taking care of her. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You would think that she would pick up on some things of, like, watching someone clean the floors. You're like,
I know.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. No, really. Like, Patrick and I were kind of talking about this very thing and saying, you know, I feel like at least today we've grown up in a time where if we're not working very hard for ourselves, then we at least have seen that. And like, we're exposed to so much more media of you can't grow up today and not see someone cleaning something at some point. You know what I mean? I feel like back then you could really turn the other cheek and really focus on, you know, the things that were your duty at that time, which, you know, being a debutante and being, you know, a woman of society. I mean, you really just had to keep up these certain appearances and that was your focus. You're not thinking about or seeing how someone cleans the floor, you know. I mean, you could see it, but it's like you're not picking up on how they're doing that because you're never thinking you're going to need to do that. Like, I feel like today a person would be more resourceful and figure that out. I feel like actually someone of Little Edie's generation would be that generation to be much more resourceful and much more willing and able to put in a little elbow grease. And obviously that did not happen in Grey Gardens, like at all.
I know somebody that grew up with a maid and she went away to college
mm-hmm.
and then she got married and her husband watched her do the laundry and he was like, "You forgot to put in the soap." And she was like, "What do you mean?"
And she oh my gosh.
The washing machine had the soap in them. Like, you didn't have to put it in.
Oh my gosh.
And he was like, "You went 4 years of college without using soap on your clothes."
Oh my God. Wow.
I had no idea.
Wow. See, that's what I'm saying. It's like, imagine, and that's from someone today. So imagine being
yeah.
a child in, you know, basically the Downton Abbey era, the late 1800s, turn of the century. By 1936, you're a grown woman with children who are almost grown, you know, 19 or so, like Little Edie. So it's like your life is not, you're just not aware of that. And socially, that's not something that's ever going to come up for you. And you know, you're never going to be exposed to learning about it through media or through music or documentaries or movies. You don't have really any of that. So there's just no way that it would have gotten to, like, she could not get that message. You know, she just, I can see a little bit with Big Edie why she just sat around and hoped it got better. Like, there's a part where, speaking of the help, where Big Edie answers the phone.
We definitely forgot to talk about this.
It pains me.
This was a big moment for me, too.
It pains me. It's like, whoo. And it's so, like, not a big moment in the film. Like, it's very glossed over. Like, this is just this is just day-to-day. This is fact. And for me,
it's setting the state of what's happening. Like,
yeah.
We saw the house in all glory, the kids running through, like, even little Jacqueline was there. And then now, return, and little Edie's seen that it's, like, kind of messy.
Yeah.
And then now, her mom has just completely
starting
like,
to lose
it. Not accepted what's happening and pretending that Molly is still working for her.
Yeah. So she answers the phone and literally puts on an Irish accent to sound like the help. Because a lot of maids would have been Irish then. I mean, that was kind of like a, you know, and they were a minority. I mean, this was like how it was. So she literally puts on an Irish accent and acts like she's the help, saying, you know, oh, hold on, let me go get Mrs. Beale. And then like pauses for a moment and then grabs the phone and goes, oh, hello, it's me. Like, it's just, it's where you're like, whoa. First of all. Like, just kind of racist, weird, uncomfortable, whatever, get past that. And then you're like, wait a second. Also, that was mentally not normal for you to do at all.
No, it's complete insanity. And then, you know, she does it again when her son calls.
Yeah.
And she's, like, caught off guard. And then she goes, oh, no, 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 it's me.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Like, how far what? Are we taking the keeping up appearances?
He probably knows that there's no staff there, so he's probably so confused when he calls, you know?
He's like, what the fuck was that? Okay. Anyway. Bad news.
That really, like, freaked me out. And then, you know, when little Edie is walking through the house and she sees it, like, it's a total mess.
Yeah. That's all happening at the same time. To me, in my mind,
that current state was a mess.
Oh, for sure.
Little did I know that, like,
that was nothing.
Later, it was going to be condemned.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's shocking. I mean, it's surprising, too, that the brothers, you know, didn't try to help, and they even...
Yeah.
They even stopped paying the utility bill.
Yeah, that whole thing is very strange. I would think, and again... You know, I kind of chalk it up to it being such a different time, but I would feel like, okay, it's pretty obvious mom's not well. She's elderly. She can't physically do work to take care of this place. But little Edie is of a certain, like, if a younger age, she could take on some work here or figure out how to hire that out or figure out what things need to be done, and she's not prioritizing it at all. And just walking into that house and getting a glimpse of those two and how they interact, I think is pretty clear. Like, there is some mental illness or mental limitation there for, like, they're just kind of so in their world, they're just not capable of, like, getting shit done. I think if I were a relative or brother, I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna have to hire out. I'm gonna have to do something. Like, Jackie does it, but it took till that point for anything.
Way too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone should have checked in on them. Someone should have done something. It's just, that's really shocking to me that, you know, her having two other sons, that they weren't willing to kind of see that there's something going on here. You know, there's clear mental illness, not just like laziness, you know?
Yeah. And that's so important to remember. You know, I actually personally worried, like, going into it, because I never had seen Grey Gardens, the documentary, or this film, and I had heard about it. My mom told me about it, like, years ago, and I kind of, like, Googled it, you know, just briefly looked it up, and was like, wow, that looks really interesting. I was like, I want to see that at some point. You got to keep in mind, like, this was before Hoarders, for one thing. Also, before reality television, so this kind of, like, as you were saying, kind of an expose, like, just turn the camera on and, like, let it roll. And I know it is a documentary. There were definitely documentaries like this long before this, for sure. But something about it, you know, being, like, just this domestic day-to-day situation rather than, okay, we're going to follow this explorer or we're going to follow this event in this town or we're going to, you know, there's such a something to look forward to in so many documentaries prior. I feel like this is one of those big ones in just the mere fact that it was so simple. And nowadays, like, reality TV is a lot like that. And all that being said, I was a little nervous thinking, I hope the documentary doesn't come off as judgy toward them. Just, and I personally didn't want to have that view going into it. I really wanted to, like, not, you know, have any judgment being a viewer. And I think it didn't really do that. I didn't get the impression that people saw it and thought, geez, what a freak show. I think people really could see it for what it was. And I love it. They sit around and they pretty much eat ice cream and pate. So it's quite the combo.
Yeah, when in the movie, when she was like, go get Jackie or Jacqueline some pate, I was like, don't eat it, Jackie.
Yeah.
No. I'm not a pate fan to begin with. I'm not having it at that house.
No. I wouldn't want strange meats at that house at all. I probably wouldn't eat any food there, really.
Were you super weirded out by, in the documentary, when they're eating corn?
Oh my God, yes. I think I'm more like weirded out by the fact that she cooked it via bedside, like, hot plate. Like, she was laying in bed and then cooking corn. Like, that was kind of revolutionary. I mean...
And then that kid, Jerry, you know, he's like, oh, I'm okay. And then he has some. And they're like, everyone loves how I do my corn.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? You just boiled it, put butter on it. Like, what are you talking about?
It's like kind of like the most basic American staple.
You can eat corn raw. They just warmed it up. Yeah. Like, there's nothing... to it and then just lathered butter on it. I love how I do my corn.
Okay, I want to talk about Jerry as well. I think so. What's funny is I also watched the documentary Now spoof, and I forgot, like, there's this part where Bill Hader, who's the little Edie of the documentary, is like, oh, well, in their version, it's Barry instead of Jerry. And he's like, well, Barry wants to have sex with me. And it's such a stretch. It's like such a, like, okay, like, you know, they're really being satirical. They're really parodying the thing, you know, whatever. It is exactly like what she basically says in the real documentary. Yeah. She's like, well, Jerry, you know, he's, what does she say? Like, he's sending signals, or he's putting it out there that he has an interest in me, mother. And it's like, dude, no. Like, Jerry's like a 20-something-year-old kid who goes and gets your groceries and gets paid by you and humors you in, like, your very unique conversations that you have with him. I don't think he's trying to get with you. But the fact that she thinks that and really entertains that idea is so interesting to me. I mean, that's just the thought that, like, when
she thought everyone wanted to sleep with her.
Yeah. And it's kind of, it's kind of sad because it's like, you realize, like, how, and I think for them, it's like time has stopped. There's like a little bit, there's a couple moments in the documentary, which this was also obviously very made fun of in the documentary Now episode, where they're kind of like suspicious of slash sort of shitting on the two guys, Brooks and Jerry, that are helping out.
Oh, for sure.
She's like, not only had at a later point got it in her head that Jerry's interested in her, but is also just like kind of his friend when she's talking to him. The second he's not there, she's just like, I don't know why he's been up here looking at these books. So it's just like, you don't know that, though. Like, you don't, just.
Yeah. Well, then she comes down and tells her mom that she saw him take the books out or something. It's like something crazy. Like, she makes up a story.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, probably a freaking raccoon grabbed it and ran with it. Like,
I just doubt the grocery boys up in the, like, attic, you know, doing anything. And I love how she also said something like, I would have seen that book if it was here. Like, she was looking around and she was like, I know, I was just cleaning here the other day, so I know what books would have been here. And I'm like, you were cleaning there the other day? Like, I don't know what that looks like. Like, how? I'm not really believing it. We have different definitions.
I know. I loved when she would just, like, go into a room and say what she wanted to do, but she didn't have the time. It was just, like, so relatable because, yeah. You know how we're all in quarantine and everyone in the beginning is like, I'm going to spring clean and I'm going to do this. And, like, no one really did it.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah,
so imagine what we're experiencing right now, mm-hmm. but on a level where they don't have television, they don't right. have the internet, they don't have electricity a lot of the time. Like,
yeah.
I can't imagine not having technology.
No.
And then just being in, like, a complete dump. Like, that's just
oh,
mentally
seriously.
Is deteriorating.
Yeah, and when you think about it like that, I'm surprised they're not a little bit more mentally off. Like, they're doing great, given what they're going through, if you will. Like,
well, I mean,
because they're yeah, friendly they're like, and...
They have, like, a huge lack of personal hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
There have to be toxic things, like, in... probably is lead-based paint. There's probably mold. There's probably asbestos.
Yeah.
Like, this house is making them more sick
right.
than they already are.
Yeah. And that's something to definitely note.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that they filmed a little bit, like, prior to that cleanup, because I just can't even imagine what the smell would have been like.
Oof. I mean, everyone's reacting when they walk in. Like, they are hit with that smell.
Well, they said they could smell from, like, down the road.
Oh, my God.
Oof. And then the neighbors were complaining, you know, the ones that were downwind of them, they could smell it.
Yeah.
So, I just can't imagine. And then, you know, you see the documentary guys in there for so long, and they had to be there for a while, I would assume.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's tons of footage they didn't use. But it had to be, like, okay if they were there for so long.
Yeah, it was definitely better by the time they were around, but they were having to deal with some issues. Like, I know there were fleas and stuff like that.
Cats have some kind of enzyme that in their teeth that when they bite you, if it breaks skin mm-hmm. and it's released, it can cause depression.
Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised.
I'm not talking about having one cat. I'm talking about, like...
Yeah, like when they hoard cats. Like, yeah.
Yeah, they have so many cats. Like,
yeah.
It was almost an episode of cat hoarders also.
And I think, too, like, and as a cat owner, I think, you know, what I love about having a cat is she's not making me go anywhere and get up and take her for a walk, you know, and I think... people who are agoraphobic, who don't want to leave the house, or who, you know, are shut-ins or recluse, like, a cat's the perfect companion because they don't really want to leave either.
So they were kind of mangy. They were really cute.
I know. That little black cat that was behind the portrait. So cute.
Taking a crap.
He was taking a little poopy. We did a little kitty poopy. He was so cute.
I love how they... put that in the movie, but Jackie O said it.
Yeah.
Like, I think the cat's going to the bathroom behind your portrait.
She's like, oh, that's fine. Okay.
Ugh. I could not.
Yeah. The portrait was great in all three versions. In obviously the original, but then was well produced in the film and in documentary now. Very funny.
Yeah, I loved the documentary now portraits when they try to make them pretty.
Yeah, when he holds up the, he's like, this is a police sketch of my mother.
It's like... yeah, she was like exposed herself.
It was so great. She's like, I didn't know it had fallen off.
Yeah, I'm glad in the movie they gave her a little bit more dignity.
Yeah.
Where in the documentary, you're like, why is she naked?
Yeah, like her boobs are practically out. She's out, man.
They were so beautiful and glamorous.
They really were. I actually remember thinking, like, you know, not only seeing their pictures from when they were younger, thinking, okay, they're really pretty, but, like, even despite their whole surroundings, they were very beautiful women, for sure.
Definitely, and... you know, Little Edie always wanted to be a dancer. Mickey mm-hmm. was a singer. They're definitely women of, you know, the arts. And it's just so shocking to me
Yeah.
How they became so recluse.
Oh, yeah.
And that they wanted to be, you know, part of that world, and they were coming from a socialite world. Did you love that line where little Edie was like, oh, just all leaves? She's like, I lost a scarf in there. It's my best scarf.
Yeah.
Never see it again.
So much.
It's just like I could hear her talk all day.
Me too. And it, some of the things she'd say are just kind of precious like that, like simple little things. That opening scene where she describes why her costume for the day is the best costume for the day, the best outfit to wear given the weather of that day. I adore that moment. I just love her for that. I'm like, look at you, like you just fashion some shit you found from the other room and threw it together, and like you're not only rocking it, but you're telling us why it's the best thing to wear today. Like, yes. Like, I love that.
What I loved was how much thought and effort she put into her clothing.
Yeah.
Even though they were living the way they did, it was like every outfit was intentional,
mm-hmm.
and matched, and even if it was something that she like made out of something else, like I could wear this as a cape.
Yeah.
Or like, or it was just like,
and any given day one could, might need a cape, you know. So
yeah, and then she says, well, I have to think about these things, like, or something like that, like, yeah. I have to. And what's so funny in the Documentary Now episode is that Bill Hader just has a pair of sweatpants on his head.
I know. It's just very practical. I think it's interesting from, like, both their perspectives. Like, Big Edie, I can, like, again, with kind of the cleaning, I can sort of understand, okay, she got to a point where she just, like, couldn't do and sort of let herself go. And she already wasn't pursuing singing or anything like that at that point. You know, she's kind of just accepted, okay, I'm older, this is my life now. But with little Edie, it's very, like, much more shocking to me that she never really tried to leave or pursue really anything else. It was, like, it's very clear that, like, there was a maybe not a full understanding of how the world worked or was, yeah, it's like she just didn't get that she could have done other things or could have tried again, or like it was just all about how that stopped, and yet she continued to dream about it. So there's like a lot of childlike mindedness there, if that makes sense.
I think a couple things are happening. I was seeing a lot of abuse from Big Edie in trying to kind of hold little Edie back.
Mm-hmm. Some manipulation,
you know, like,
for sure.
In the movie when she has the audition and she's like, come home, the talent scout will wait. Come
I know.
Home. Like, she just wanted her home. She just didn't want to be alone.
Yeah. And I think a modern and mom then, would actually do the opposite and say, you're not going to let some boy ruin your big audition tomorrow. You know, you know, take a minute, but get better tomorrow and good luck tomorrow, you know. I mean, that's what
I think. Yeah, and then also, you know, back then it was just like find a husband to take care of you, and little Edie had ambitions to, you know, be a star and, mm-hmm. and make her own life, and she didn't want a husband, or, you know, she only wanted to date married men.
Yeah.
Get to see a great Baldwin performance there.
Yeah. Right when I saw him, I was like, that's a Baldwin. Don't know which one. Definitely one of
when
them.
When you see a Baldwin, your first thought is, so it's not Alec.
Yeah.
Who is...
Yeah, you're right. That was my first thought. It's not Alec, so which one is it?
And it's like, is it Billy? Is it Steven? Is it Dan?
Exactly. Well put, Brie.
they're great.
So true. Yeah, she just, I found it interesting that she was very strong-minded. Little Edie, that is, was very strong-minded in, like, kind of a little ahead of her time, being like, I really want to just pursue the thing that I want to do. I'm artsy, you know, I have that in my mind as a possibility, especially having come from money and privilege. It's like, okay, I'm going to pursue this fun thing.
That building actually had a lot of, like, famous, like, socialites that lived there.
Oh, wow.
And it was known to be, like, this place where people kind of get married from it.
Oh, okay.
And it's even, Sylvia Plath lived there.
Whoa.
And she wrote about it in the Bell Jar, but she, you know, kind of changed the name and stuff. But it was, like, inspired by that same building. Wow.
That is very, very
even
interesting.
Even Grace Kelly lived there.
Wow. Yeah, and I think that kind of a place would be good for someone, especially like Little Edie, and use your societal connections, yeah, you know.
Did you notice when she first wanted to go to New York and Big Edie was like, well, what, your dad's going to get you connections at the law firm? He's going to help you. He's going to set it all up.
Right.
She right there was just crushing her dreams. And if she just would have let her go, you know, yeah, Little Edie would have found her way.
I think
in some way, you know, whether she would be singing at nightclubs or modeling or whatever, or married somebody, I think she would have had a much better life.
Right. This whole movie, or I should say this whole story, is a very interesting one to look at for Mother's Day, given that it's really about this mother-daughter relationship and how she, as in Big Edie, you know, is and isn't supportive of Little Edie, and how Little Edie is there for her and isn't there for her. It's their dynamic is fascinating. Like, even just in the documentary, like, they're clearly attached to each other, but they really are hard on each other. They bitch at each other, and they put each other down quite a bit. And I think that's like kind of a mother-daughter thing to do. I think it's better in some relationships than it is in others. But that's one of the biggest, they say that a mother-daughter relationship is in fact the most, I guess, what, intense relationship in a person's life that can be had. Like, that's, you know, I believe it, like, looking at this tale, really.
Well, it's really interesting, too, that, you know, they have the same name, and that's not common to name a daughter after a mother.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's Lorelai and Rory. But there's something to being a junior or a second of living up to that name, and there's kind of a control, you know, even with men when there's a junior, and there's an expectation there to be just like the father, and it's just kind of interesting how Big Edie had such a hold on Little Edie, but you know, the brothers were able to get away and have their own lives and marry and children.
Right. And it is kind of like you have certain shoes you have to fill, which is kind of all the more reason I wonder why Big Edie wasn't a little more supportive in her and Little Edie's endeavors to take up art, given that she herself had done it in the past, but maybe given her experience, just tried to say, look, don't waste your time. The most important thing while you're young right now is to hold them down. Cause that back then, like if you reached a certain age, you know, 30 was old to, you know, be a single person then. And now that's not at all. But back then it was like, oh, like nobody's going to want you. So I think maybe she was like looking out for her in that regard of like, you've got to be taken care of. That's like our way of life. Not only for the time, but also just being, you know, society people. But I think it is a little sad that she couldn't have been like, I get that you want to sing and I get that you want to dance. And, you know, let's see if there's a way that we can make that happen. Like, I don't know. It seems like that just wasn't at all as much a concern for Big Edie as it maybe could have been.
I thought what was interesting too was how she had so many, maybe even, like, opportunities to marry someone really rich.
Yeah.
One of
I know. I did read that.
You know, the getting. Yeah, well, they mention it in the movies, too.
Yeah.
And Jerry actually works at the Getty Estate. And the son did have an eye out for little Edie, but she, you know, she didn't like the bachelor boy. She just thought that it was so, you know, they were just, she didn't like them. They were boring and.
Yeah.
You know, which I kind of get.
Yeah. I can't blame her for finding those guys boring.
I'm watching Summer House right now, and it's a lot of, like, that same thing. Yeah. They're in the Hamptons. And just those men that are, you know, like, such bros.
Groomed a certain way.
They wear all white.
Yeah. No, that ain't my jam either, Edie. I get you, girl.
That's not interesting to me.
Yeah. And some people, you know, obviously, like, the status and the position is just more important than considering like those types of elements of your a real relationship and who you're going to be with the rest of your life. And, you know, in some ways, I think some people would look at little Edie and go, oh, like it's that she can get married. But in some ways it's like, she didn't waste her time with a person she really couldn't give a shit about. She spent all her time with the person she pretty much cared for the most, even when she couldn't stand her, you know? And
yeah,
that's unique. That's interesting. I liked in the film that we got to see a lot of that, whereas in the documentary, it was just they sort of mentioned that. And they even fought about that. They fought about, like, you know, the reality of really what had taken place. Like, Edie would say, well, this is what happened with this guy. And I really liked him. And then, you know, Big Edie was like, that's not how it happened. Like, he wasn't as smitten with you as you thought. And it's like, oof, jeez. Like, you know, they have big conversations like that. Heavy, big conversations that mention big things, even though they'll have those conversations in kind of like a strange, eccentric manner, if you will. Like, it's yeah. Kind of a character study into itself. Like, it's very, very unique is the word I keep using. It keeps coming to mind.
So I really thought the scene was funny when they're making a cocktail and there's like this weird, like, you know, cleaned out mason jar from probably like jam or something.
Yeah.
And she's, like, mixing this drink, and then she tries to get something to eat. But then in the documentary Now episode, it's just, like, a fishbowl.
Yeah, oh my god, I love that. It's a giant fishbowl.
So big.
Well, they nod to it in the film in the beginning. I don't know if they show that exact scene in the film, but, like, or I should say in the middle when when she's all by herself. Like, when Gould had finally left her, and she's really all alone. And she has a mason jar, and at first I thought she's just drinking water out of a mason jar, and I see two olives in it. I'm like, that's a fucking martini in a mason jar. So that's a big martini.
Yeah.
Like, and I did kind of find that, you know, go, oh, okay, well, we kind of see that in the other ones too. So, kind of like that touch.
It's so funny, as a kid, my dad would drink out of like clean out mason jars. And I remember being so embarrassed. Like, why
really?
Does dad have to drink? Because it would be like a huge mason jar, like the big one.
Oh my god!
And
like at Lucille's, like the giant one.
Water and ice, and like work in the garage or the yard all day on a Saturday, and drink out of this like gigantic cup. And I remember just being so embarrassed. And then like come 2007, and it just becomes the biggest fad of people like drinking out of mason jars at every wedding, you know.
Yeah,
thankfully that is gone.
I know, that was literally everywhere.
It was so triggering when that became a fad, because I was like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. My dad drink out of, we call them jelly jars as a
yeah.
kid. We'd be like, dad, my friends are coming over, don't drink out of your jelly jar.
Oh my god, how funny. It's too much.
I had a friend growing up that only, like, their whole family only drank out of coffee mugs, and I absolutely hated it.
Yeah, that's bothersome. Why does that bother me?
I just can't drink something cold out of a mug. Like, it's too much. So you go over there, and she's like, oh, like, we have, you know, orange juice, water. And I was, like, 12 or something. And like, yeah. Oh, I'll have some orange juice. And then she pours it into a coffee mug. I'm like, what is
this? No, it's, like, too eclectic for me. That's already too much. That's where my OCD goes at.
I just think they didn't have anything else. Maybe they broke all of the glasses, so they're like, oh, we just have a bunch of coffee mugs left.
Like,
I just couldn't, like, get past it.
Yeah. That's, like, not that I'm a fan of Dorit from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, but that's where I would probably pull a Dorit and be like, do you have, like, a glass that this actually belongs in?
There's another documentary that came out in 2018, and that's prequel footage of Grey Gardens, which was filmed in 1972.
Oh, wow.
And I think that was part of what was filmed that was going to be about, you know, the Bouvier family, and then they, like, backed out of it.
That's right.
So I think that's where that found footage is from. I definitely, like, when you asked, you know, when I first came into knowledge of this, I guess. I don't really, like, it's so hard to tell. I just have that imagery of little Edie with, like, a headscarf on in my head for so long.
Yeah. I think even when
I didn't know much about it, I knew that face with a headscarf.
Yeah. I think when I looked it up that first time, I just saw that first image of, like, her with the fur coat and the scarf. And I was like, and with all the brush around her that's, like, just overgrown and wild and the house in the background, like, that shot is so, like, to me, that embodies it. Like, that's the first image I saw of it, and that's the one that sticks for me. And I just love that. Like, if I was ever going to play her, like, I would just fully embody that mood, you know? Like, it's great. Yeah. I don't know how people can live like that. I mean, obviously, these gals did.
Oh, definitely. It's not hugely depression. There's some other stuff going on. And like I mentioned earlier, with lead and mold and chemicals and the animal feces, there's just gotta be a lot going on, and it is kind of shocking that they both lived so long.
Yeah, they did. They really kind of lived to their fullest, both of them, so that's kind of interesting too. I mean,
what I do love to, like, wrap it up is that little Edie, like, just wanted to be a star, and it was so amazing to see, like, she really did become a star.
I know.
People knew her and she became famous. She got to do cabaret for a short time, but it was like, yeah, it was disgusting and kind of exploitive. Mm-hmm. But in her eyes, like, she got what she wanted.
Yeah, I did really like that. I have to say, I, like I said from the beginning, a little nervous about the tone of both the documentary and the movie. Like, is it going to be, like, put this judgy kind of veil over them? And I didn't get that at all. And I think it kind of humanized them even more. And, you know, the movie especially, because it digs into their past and really tells their story. But by the end, I mean, I cried in the end when she got her flowers and she literally got the spotlight and people were clapping and they enjoyed the documentary and were happy to have her at the premiere. Like, I really was like that. They did it a perfect wrap up on this film. Like, they got it. I loved it.
Yeah, and her mom, like, gave her the wedding jewelry to wear. It was just, like, so sweet.
Oh, I thought that was really, because that was, we see that right in the opening. It was a perfect bookend. In this movie, it was kind of like, you know, start to finish, full circle, with the jewelry, and the scene they have before she decides that she is going to go to the premiere is very important. It's Big Edie really finally saying, wow, a lot of this was my fault, and I should have let you go. I should have let you go to New York, and I didn't. And she finally acknowledges that, but then little Edie is kind of like, okay, like, maybe I will go to this premiere. Like, she's kind of like, you know, realizing how much her mom does need her and can't really be without her, but is like, wow, maybe it is okay sometimes to, like, do something that's important to me. Overall, I would say, like, that shows how women's roles kind of were then. Your life was just, you had to get married to be taken care of, period. That was, you know, if you want to be taken care of, like, that's what you had to do. And especially for Big Edie and for Little Edie, it was like, is there something else? And I feel like those restrictions felt so tight to her that she kind of thought, I'd rather just have nothing then and make that something than follow these restrictions and these rules and these expectations, if you will. It's just kind of an interesting way to rebel.
Yeah, it's interesting how Edie or Big Edie would say something to Little Edie and then change it if it was convenient to her point at the time. So, you know, she would say one thing and say, you're not free unless you're, you know, supporting yourself. And then another time she's saying, like, well, you only can have freedom if you're supported.
Right.
And, you know, she would say things like, that she didn't want her there, but then it was really clear that she needed her there and would say, you know, you have to stay with me. And I think that's just, like, such a mom thing to, like, change. It's like, the exact opposite of what they said, you know, at an earlier time. Just to say, kind of, I told you so, or because I said so.
Yeah.
It's like, but didn't you say that?
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do, right?
I'm glad that Little Edie got what she wanted.
Yeah.
She became a star. She's famous.
Go, Little Edie.
I'm so glad that someone restored the home.
I know.
If you guys want to look it up, the address is 3 West End Road in East Hampton, New York.
And, yeah, there's a pretty good, I'll post that link here from just, I'm seeing photos here from Zillow. And it's kind of, it's like a happy ending in itself to see the same property given some love and attention and proper care. And it just looks like this really beautiful home. Like, this is something, you know.
It had that view and it was, you know, a walk away to the ocean and just, once had an incredible garden.
Yeah. Ugh. Final thoughts on my end. I really, really, really loved this movie. Thank you so much for recommending it. Hadn't seen it. So glad I did. And I'm glad it prompted me to watch the documentary beforehand. Just made the experience, like, all around, felt like I was fully immersed in it. And I loved it. I'm still fascinated.
Yeah, I really loved it too, and I think I'm going to watch that that last summer little documentary tonight too, because it's just so interesting, and I just love seeing their interactions.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's like you do eventually get past, like, all of the hoarding of the house, and the current state it's in, and you just kind of see these two women that have, like, such an interesting relationship and a kind of view on the world and, like, what's important to them, and they're so isolated.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a bit that you can relate to during this quarantine.
Very much so. I thought, how much can we relate here? You know, these people are high society. They come from this background, this different time. They come from, I mean, for me, a different place. Like, they live in this mansion and they're recluse and it's kind of Hoardersville and they're very eccentric. You know, what would I watch and find, you know, what would I find that I have in common with them? And when I did watch it, I really felt like it was so, like you said, you get past all that and you see them for really who they are and just how they are. And that becomes a thing you really can relate to. Any mother-daughter relationship, you'll see parts of it and go, I know how that feels, or I could see a little bit of,
exactly.
you know.
Like, and that sounds like my mom.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Totally.
I might find myself dancing in a bathing suit by myself, like, in my house pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get myself a little American flag. I'm going to do the dance. I'm going to look at Patty and say, where have you been? Where have you been all my life? Where have you been?
It was so iconic. Like, I loved that scene so much, and I loved it. That's how, you know, the movie starts, too. It's like, here we go.
Yeah. It is, like, the iconic moment, and I like that that's this fun, playful way you can really remember her.
It delivered a lot more than I thought.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I kind of was thinking, okay, it's going to be a little bit wacky, a little weird, but it ended up being, like, so heartfelt and so in-depth, and it just, it had a lot to it. And like I said, I'm still intrigued, and this is going to be one of those ones that I'm going to always turn back to and want to constantly know more about. So thank you. Being recluse, being isolated, being, in some ways, hoarders. At least I've turned into a hoarder when it comes to going to the grocery store these days. This quarantine calls for a Grey Gardens drinking game. We, here at Salem Binks Present, are going to provide that for you.
Yeah, so my first drinking game rule would be anytime Big Edie is singing.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, because she reminisces. She goes back to the days with Gould, and it's, I like that. That would be good. So take a shot anytime you hear Big Edie singing Tea for Two, the classic jam. Want to call it?
My second rule is take a drink every time Little Edie has a new or different headscarf on.
Ooh, yeah, okay. I like that. Every time, or take a sip every time Little Edie dances for us.
Like, yes.
Her dances are fantastic. She's got gumption. She's got charisma. Take a shot when Big Edie pretends to be an Irish maid on the phone.
That's perfect. Yes, that's great.
Yeah, I kind of need a shot for that moment because it's about to get weird. I have one chug your drink moment. It's not too long a sequence, but it's a much needed sequence. The moment when they're finally coming to clean the house so that it doesn't have to be condemned.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one.
you're just like, thank God, get all that shit out of there. Keep drinking until that moment is wrapped up.
My finish your drink would be when Little Edie goes to the premiere and gets, like, the roses, and it's
just
so happy.
Oh, that's the best ending. Like, I just really, like, I swear to God, I cried. I loved it. I loved it. Thank you guys so, so much for joining us on this special quarantine Mother's Day episode. I cannot thank you enough, Bree, for not only phoning in to do this episode with me, but for suggesting we do Grey Gardens.
It was so fun. I'm glad. I had never seen it either, so it was a fun experience for us both.
I'm so glad. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much to Fiona, our producer, / my one kitten. I do not hoard kittens. I have one cat. And thank you so much to my big brother and our big sponsor, Bijan Sharifi. Thank you, thank you, thank you for this equipment. Thank you guys for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, on Pinterest, and on Instagram. And don't forget to visit the website, sign up for the email list, or sign up to become a member and get even more. Thank you guys so much for joining us today, and happy Mother's Day. Thank you to all the mamas.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day.
This is motherly. This makes me want to just, like, quarantine with my mom. And we could just drink wine and hang out with our cats. We're not too far off. This is us. This is, I can relate too much.
If I quarantined with my mom, it would be zero cats, but a lot of singing.
Yes.
Little dancing. Like, amazing meals.
Yeah.
And fancy cocktails and just, like, lounging by the pool.
Oof.
This actually sounds amazing.
Sounds great. Okay, can me and my mom come in quarantine with you and your mom, and then we could all just, like, eat better food than pate and hang out by the pool. I'll supply the cats, of course. You have to have some cats.